The Language of Deceit. Notes and Extracts. Players in the Game. Nonsense is the only logical conclusion when we are left for too long in our own disconnectedness. The world is the way that it is for very specific reasons. The 20th century produced no end of the required disposable subjects who were volunteered for all kinds of Manchurian candidate psychological torture. The belief that behavior had to have mechanisms was the main driver. The trouble was and is that when change is permanent, the damage can be serious. Under projects such as Bluebird and Artichoke, within the United States, a study of how to shape the national morale would be quietly undertaken. If one person could be broken down, then similarly everybody could be broken down. If one could be persuaded to act against their will, then many others could also be persuaded. Covert research always filters down to be used in some way on everyday people. Milton Erickson, a hypnotist become therapist, was one of the first prominent experts to be called upon by governments to demonstrate how false memories and hypnotic commands could be embedded into the minds of people. Detailed analysis showed how emotional storms could be activated on demand. As such, ideas could be directed, and resultingly reflexes conditioned. Behavior laboratories were set up, and the human nervous system was studied to see just how far emotions could be controlled. Pain and fear and reward would be studied from the outside in and from the inside out. Torture would be euphemized with such terms as experiment and development and research. In the end, anthropology, psychology, and psychotherapy would blur all of their lines. Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron, who was deeply involved in the MKUltra projects, belonged to an elite group of the most well-known and respected psychiatrists in the 1960s. In his clinic, funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, he was performing various inhuman experiments using methods such as electroshock therapy and other painful procedures, usually on people against their will. In addition, in the late 1960s, the CIA opened safe houses where people could take experimental drugs such as LSD, while officials were recording them for their studies. These communities would then produce associated art and music and literature that would influence the subconscious minds of communities all over the world. Human creativity had been weaponized in the most sophisticated way. A new type of ability for remote control of populations would arise. The 20th century was also the age of conspicuous consumption, which has more recently led to a culture of overconsumption. Those who could be persuaded to lose the health of their body would soon also lose the health of their mind. Then, much later, the amalgamation of the US Food and Drug Administrations would only serve to tell everyone what they already knew. Food changed mood, and so did drugs. They could really be classed as one and the same. And that element of influence could not be let alone. The opportunities were far too promising. Edward Bernays was the father of modern propaganda in public relations and a nephew of Sigmund Freud. He applied psychological techniques such as indirect suggestion and hidden desire into modern advertising. He wrote many books, among them Propaganda, where he openly talks about the elite's ability to control society and that the duty of the intellectual element of society is to orchestrate the beliefs and behavior of the public in order to have a cohesive world. Manipulation would be redefined as marketing. Today's political science is mostly based on Bernays' lifelong work. Back in 1928, a book was published by long-forgotten author Albert Whitman about public relations and public opinions, where he states that the public is not inherently irrational, but that the establishment can use propaganda and the media to play upon people's existing irrationalities, instead of introducing to them intellectual concepts and clear definitions. They would only introduce confusion. Nowadays, the distraction of television, along with films, radio, magazines, newspapers, the internet, and endless mindless sporting events, is one of the main factors in keeping the public passive and controlled. Scientists have clearly shown that within 3 minutes of watching television, people fall into a very suggestible mode resembling a zombie state, where the commercials can easily prey upon your subconscious and unconscious mind. Your rationality anchors and your inner fears. Attention spans have also dropped over the 20th century, from around 3 minutes to between 7 and 15 seconds. In 1964, a Spanish neuroscientist, José Delgado, implanted radio-controlled electrodes in the brain of an aggressive bull in an attempt to control its behavior in a ring with a matador. With the punch of a button, he could stop the bull right away. These tests were followed by experiments on rats, monkeys, cats, and even human subjects. These were the first microchip implants. He was, anyway, not the first to pursue such brutal scientific methods of control. Russian scientist Ivan Pavlov, commonly famous for his behaviorist work on dogs, had also experimented with human subjects in an attempt to control human behavior and reflexes. Some of these experiments involved drilling into the heads of young children a sad and violent precursor for more later brutal psychiatric experiments throughout the 20th century. The masses have regularly served as cannon fodder, and hot and cold and finally silent wars have only sped up the process of scientific self-discovery. Man was a machine, and to control the mind was to control the machine. The goal of science would shift from understanding to control. Rightly timed interventions could lead to defeating the predictions of what was thought to be inevitable. If development could be limited or arrested, then the upper echelons of society need no longer worry about revolutions by the unwashed masses. Cybernetics could steer us into a comfortable, brave new world. Although George Orwell knew that control was the goal, he underestimated the value of science in bringing the great work one step closer to providing the final solution. Nobody understood this better than Aldous Huxley, who was always the public mouthpiece for the desires of those seeking a truly collective culture. Servitude could be encouraged and induced, and with the right stimulation, might even be enjoyed. When queried on the topic of revolts, Huxley simply responded that the perfect dictatorship would have the appearance of a democracy, but would basically be a prison without walls, in which the prisoners would not even dream of escaping. It would essentially be a system of slavery, where, through consumption and entertainment, the slaves would love their servitudes. Perhaps even more enlightening is this passage from his book, Brave New World Revisited. The real hopeless victims of mental illness are to be found amongst those who appear to be most normal. Many of them are normal because they are so well adjusted to our mode of existence, because their human voice has been silenced so early in their lives that they do not even struggle or suffer or develop symptoms as the neurotic does. They are normal not in what may be called the absolute sense of the word. They are normal only in relation to a profoundly abnormal society. Their perfect adjustment to what abnormal society is a measure of their mental sickness. These millions of abnormally normal people, living without fuss in a society to which, if they were fully human beings, they ought not to be adjusted. The book Tragedy and Hope, written by the professor Carol Quigley in 1966, is one of the most credible pieces of evidence that we, as a collective society, are ruled by certain groups of elites that formed secret and not so secret global societies, fraternities, and brotherhoods, funded by international bankers and cartels with monopolies and unwritten rules and laws. It covers the development of Western political cultures through source documents across the 19th and 20th centuries, and gives many insights into who funded our present systems into being. The book was of course never intended for public consumption, but somehow it leaked out. The fact is that the average mind is little able to comprehend the epic scale of a plan that spans both generations and civilizations. One possible outcome of studying this information is the understanding that if the systems of our society are training us to be resources for the global profit of others, then by becoming alert and by critically evaluating the information through methods of reasonable logic, such as using the trivium and quadrivium in education, we can act on a personal level and change our society for the actual benefit of everyone. However, before one can solve the problem, one must recognize the problem. Most problems that remain unsolved do so because they have not been clearly identified. Evolution requires that we not just manage the system, but that processes of understanding evolve to replace old problems with new ones. The language of deceit. Notes and extracts.